Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Before we take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue, I am looking for police authors. I am looking for stories for the third in the series, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them. So, if you are a current police officer, former police officer, retired law enforcement officer, and you've written a story of at least 1,500 words, I want you to submit that story to me. Let me take a look at it. If you go to www.truebluestories.com, you'll see all the criteria. You'll see exactly what I'm looking for. And there's also a method for submitting your story there. So go to truebluestories.com, read about it. If you know a police officer who's got a story, and they all do, let them know that I'm looking for these stories and that they will go to benefit a very, very good cause. So check it out, truebluestories.com. Let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The Briefing Room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Another school shooting. Another school shooting that ended, and this time, the way it should have ended, with the death of the suspect and the heroic actions of a police officer who stopped the attack. This attack occurred in a high school in Maryland, in St. Mary's County, I believe, is where it was located. Now, here's where this is a little different than the Parkland shooting, okay? There was a school resource officer in the school at the time. He's a St. Mary's County deputy sheriff. His name was Blaine Gaskill. Now, he was in the school, and he heard gunshots. What had taken place is a 17-year-old student came into the school armed with a handgun, apparently looked for his a woman or a student, female student who he had had a relationship with, and shot her, shot a male student, at which time the deputy was there within seconds, engaged the suspect, fired at the suspect, and the suspect is dead. This is the way it should end. Both of the victims are still living, at least at this moment. The female is critically injured. The male is has also been shot and taken to the hospital. But what it shows is that this is the quintessential: a good guy with a gun takes out a bad guy with a gun. Now, the investigation is in its infancy, but why this punk was motivated to do what he did, that's going to come out. Where did he get the gun? Did he take it from his parents, which is the most likely, or did he obtain it in some other way? He certainly didn't have it legally. And this, of course, points to some of the insanity about making everything in the world illegal when it comes down to weapons. This punk decided he was going to use that gun for violence. He didn't give a damn about the weapons laws, and he went out and, unfortunately for him, met with a committed law enforcement officer who used his skill and used his training and tactics to take care of business. So, we had the Parkland shooting, which was, just a mess on every level, and then we have this shooting following, about a month and a half later, that ended quite differently. Now, while we're talking about the Parkland shooting, some other interesting details have come to light, and that is that the shooter had previous encounters with the same school resource officer who's under fire for not going into the building and engaging this suspect. They had actually had confrontation, and the school resource officer, along with the school staff, had recommended that this punk, who was clearly a violent individual, be involuntarily committed. So they had made the recommendation. Now the question is, who dropped the ball on this? Once again, you know, this was an epic failure on law enforcement, but also an epic failure on the system itself. The school should have taken greater action. Now it's coming to light that both the school staff as well as this school resource officer recognized the danger that this kid posed, and still nothing was done. This is one of those cases that, you know, I sympathize with all the students that are now, you know, walking out of school and, you know, jumping on the, you know, ban the gun bandwagon, etc. But that's not the real answer to this. The real answer is to recognize the signs, do something about it, and form a system that actually is effective and works. So I want to tell you about a little good news that came out of a jury decision. Now, there have been some bonehead jury decisions lately, but this one's actually decent. For those of you who have followed some of the reality television shows involving law enforcement, there was a show called I think Southern Justice, if I remember correctly, and it was on National Geographic. And it was a ride-along show like Cops and like some of the others. Well, one of the deputies that was featured in that show was a guy named Josh Hopkins. He went by the name of Hoppy. Deputy Hoppy Hopkins. Well, I have had a number of conversations with Deputy Hopkins because of what took place with him. This is an absolute tragic system of injustice. Let me tell you what happened with him. He was involved in an officer-involved shooting. And it was a guy who was armed. He was in a pickup truck. He was drunk. He tried to run over Deputy Hopkins. And Hopkins used his weapon. He killed the suspect. This was investigated by his department. It was investigated by the district attorney's office. It was investigated by the state. And he was cleared of all charges. Okay, life is good. He's featured on this show a few times. Then he takes a job out of state in a sheriff's department in the next state over. Well, a friend of the suspect, the guy who got shot by Hopkins, gets elected to the office of district attorney. Now, this is 2 years later, right? And what does this moron do? He presents a case to the grand jury. It's at first no build, but then he re-presents it, and he gets an indictment against Deputy Hopkins and winds up arresting him for murder. I mean, it's absolutely startling that what took place. And then, you know, a new regime had taken hold in the sheriff's department, so there was all kinds of cover-ups and political maneuvering, and Deputy Hopkins gets arrested, and now he has to face trial. Well, I mean, this thing. He and I had a number of conversations. This guy is a good cop. He's done nothing wrong, and yet he's facing the crushing system that he was a part of. Well, this has now gone on for several years, because the shooting originally took place in 2013, and in 2015, the new district attorney got an indictment against him and arrested him. So here's the thing: this jury that was impaneled here. Now, this is after he's already cleared of any wrongdoing by the State Bureau of Investigation and the Attorney General, or excuse me, and the District Attorney. Then they arrest him, and they bring him back for trial. Well, guess what? The jury was out about 12 seconds and came in with a not guilty. So finally, this ordeal, this particular part of this officer's ordeal is over. The financial issues here, the emotional strain, it's just outrageous. And this district attorney who did this, this guy needs to be disbarred. I hope that Deputy Hopkins can file a lawsuit against him for wrongful prosecution, and Deputy Hopkins is going to be a guest on Blue Lives Radio. We're going to set up that interview here in the next few days, and so he will be on an upcoming show, so you can hear it directly from him. And this is a story that everybody needs to hear, because this is judicial misconduct at its very best. Now, this is in a rural county. These district attorneys have an immense amount of power, but we've seen it in Maryland with six officers who were involved in the Freddie Gray case. They were politically prosecuted by Marilyn Mosby, and we've seen this around the country. But this is absolutely a very egregious case. So keep your eyes open for, or your ears open, I should say, for the episode in which Hoppy Hopkins will be a featured guest in the interview room. So I also want to tell you about the insanity continues in California as the war heats up between the federal government, immigration, and the sanctuary cities and states and those political morons in California. You know, the system is designed, the criminal justice system is designed to work in harmony with each other. It even in the best of times, the system can be overburdened and it can be, confused. But it's designed that everybody works together, that the federal government and the state government and the local government all work together to protect the people. That's the whole name of the game here, right? But now that the political machinations put in place by the state legislators, the governor of California, the politicos who are running police agencies and sheriff's departments, now they've jumped in, and they have basically just decided they're not going to cooperate with the immigration authorities. So what they have done is just simply refuse to acknowledge what are called detainers. A detainer is when one agency asks another agency to detain a prisoner and not release them until they can get to them to make another either custodial arrest or talk to them. That's what a detainer is. They've been used for years. It's just a matter of doing business. Well, the California has decided they're not gonna entertain those detainers any longer. So what they've been doing is, when they have a criminal who has been arrested for, say, sexual assault, and they post bond, they just release them. They don't notify ICE any longer, because that's their way of going, nah, 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 nah. We're not going to recognize your authority. This is absurd on every level. It's literally allowing violent criminals back onto the streets to do what they do best, which is victimize others. Well, now the Border Patrol agents are refusing to turn over wanted felons to California police, who have put detainers on them. So now, and what's the reason? Because they could turn them over to the California cops, and then they ask them to return them to them after they're done, and they're not doing it. So it's like the California police, based on political considerations, are taking these wanted criminals, and then they're pushing them through their system. Sometimes they're not even making them post bail. These are serious felony crimes we're talking about. So now, the Border Patrol agents aren't turning over their prisoners over to the cops to face the justice that they should be facing in the municipalities and cities and states. So what we're seeing here is a complete systemic breakdown based on politics. Now, like I said, the criminal justice system is supposed to work concurrently and jointly for the safety of the people that they serve. But how are we going to do that when you have Governor Moonbeam over there, the state legislators jumping up and screaming politics and, you know, we let my people go, instead of doing what they're sworn to do, which is protect the people that they are allegedly serving. So this is taking place. This is going to continue to escalate, and we're going to continue to have more and more problems as politics continues to rear its ugly head in California and other sanctuary cities. And while we're talking about injustice, my blood is boiling over this judge down in Louisiana. This woman, this judge named Trudy White, she's a judge in near Baton Rouge. She's got blood on her hands, I got to tell you. She's literally got blood on her hands for the death of a police officer. I think that I probably talked about this death last week. Officer Chris Lawton is a reserve officer with the Zachary, Louisiana Police Department, okay? Zachary's a small town, and Christopher Lawton, 41 years of age, is a full-time firefighter, but he's a part-time reserve officer. And what that means is he has all the sworn duties of a law enforcement officer. Makes arrests, does tickets, does the whole bit. But he does it for free. There's reserve officers all over this country. These men and women who want to give back to their communities, and they literally put their lives on the line for nothing. This officer did the same thing. And he was murdered in the line of duty while he was moving in to make an arrest on a drug suspect. Now, he was literally crushed to death by the suspect who was driving a U-Haul, and he purposely ran him over with the U-Haul and killed him. Officer Lawton was a giving human being who was a good citizen, made a difference in the lives of many people. And this punk who killed him, well, he was out on reduced bail. That's right, reduced bail by this Judge Trudy White. Now, here's the other thing about this Trudy White. She was elected based on her relationships with felons. She celebrated her relationships with felons and used them in her commercials. And she was elected. And then what does she do? She takes a punk like this killer and reduces his bail. Now, this is a guy, you talk about revolving door criminal justice system. If you could take a picture of it, this would be in the dictionary. Because what she was doing, what she would take this guy who would beat a woman with an AR-15. I mean, we're talking about a violent offender. And when she would have him before her, she would reduce his bail so that he could get out. He was out on reduced bail when he killed this police officer. This is injustice at its very worst. And this judge, here's how these judges have feathered their own nests. They can't be sued. No matter what they do, no matter how egregious the actions that they take, they cannot be sued because they built that immunity for themselves. So this creature, this I don't even like to call her a judge. She doesn't deserve to be called that. Needs to be held accountable, and unfortunately, I don't think she ever will. But she's got the blood of a police officer on her hands right now, and I hope that the people of Baton Rouge realize it. I can tell you that their chief in Zachary does. He's been very outspoken about this misconduct, and I hope that there's an investigation into this judge. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue for this week. We're going to take a walk into the interview room, where we're going to talk to an interesting woman who who really cares about police canines. Anything that I can do to make law enforcement lives better, safer, and more effective, you can count me in. And I got to tell you about an incredible investigative tool that I have discovered. For those detectives involved in any criminal activity, investigations, and crime analysts too, this is amazing. And it's got a couple different uses. I mean, you can use it for conspiracies. You can use it for murder investigations, drug investigations, trafficking humans. It was originally created for IED investigations. That's improvised explosive devices in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the owner, the president of this company, which is Blue Light LLC, is a retired Green Beret Sergeant Major. And they use this stuff very effectively. It is now available to police agencies, big and small. And I got to tell you, I've seen it in use. It is amazing. It's Blue Light LLC, okay? And any criminal investigation where you want to gather the evidence and show the connections to people, this is the product. I've seen it. It's amazing. And these people do incredible work with it. They train you up in it. And it's for big agencies, small agencies. It's being used all over the country. It's in conjunction with IBM. This is amazing, amazing software. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, and that's bluelightllc.com. Check it out, and this will solve crimes and save lives. Now, if you're a police officer or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a woman who has a passion. Passion for paws, I should say. Tina Richardson is the founder and president of Protection for Paws. Now, this is a 501c3 nonprofit that, well, I'll let her tell it. Thanks so much, Tina, for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I'm happy that you're here. And, you know, I saw your a little bit about your organization, and I love the work that you're doing. It's very different than some of the other things that are happening out there. And first of all, let's talk about you for a second.
Okay.
You live in Pennsylvania, and what was it that got you involved and interested in helping law enforcement canines all over the country?
Well, it actually started out here locally. I have a Girl Scout troop, and we were trying to determine what our community project was going to be. So I reached out to the internet, and I tried to find out different things that were going on, and I wanted it to be something with law enforcement because I have a bunch of girls that were young, and I wanted there to be a connection, some sort of a way that we could give back to the community and give back to our law enforcement. And also kind of give the girls a connection to our local police department. So at an early age, they can start understanding that our police are there to help them, not to hurt them. And that's when I started researching the canines, because obviously I have a love and a passion for dogs, and so does my troop. And we found out that our two local dogs here did not have any type of ballistic vests. So we raised the money for the first two dogs here in town to receive ballistic vests. From there, my family and I started researching dogs a little bit more in the area and finding out that there was more of a need out there, not only for ballistic vests, but also for things that basic equipment that a lot of people do not realize that many of these canine units are self-funded. They don't have the financial support to be able to get the items that are needed through their department, so they have to do that basically through their own fundraising and through their own grants and donations. So we wanted to make a difference, so my family and I decided to create Protection for Paws. It's just a fundraising campaign, and it was just going to be just a little bit here and there to try and get these dogs taken care of. And the more and more we started researching it, the more and more we found out that there was a huge need, not only in our local community, but also in communities across the United States. So we decided to take Protection for Paws to the next level, and in February of 2017, we created Protection for Paws Incorporated, which became a fully-fledged nonprofit. And then from there, we've just been going gangbusters, trying to get as many dogs taken care of as we can.
You know, many people don't realize something that you just said, and that is that many police agencies don't fund their own canine units. You know, they may purchase the dog, but they're on a skin and bones budget, and so sometimes it falls upon the handler or the community to get behind that canine and outfit him properly and make sure that that the dog is taken care of. Personally, I don't understand that. I think that it's incumbent upon the police agencies to fully fund their canine units, but that's one of the realities. And so I applaud the effort that you're doing. Now, you know, you said something that I found very interesting. The vests, the ballistic vests that the dogs wear, that's not your sole purpose, is protecting them through the vests, but you have some other protections as well.
Exactly. There are a lot of different companies, a lot of great nonprofits out there that are taking care of canines and providing them with the ballistic material that they need. We wanted Protection for Paws to be a little bit different. So when we established it as a nonprofit, we established it to be generic and not specific. And the reason that we did that is because we wanted to be able to adapt the needs of what we were providing with the needs of the canines as they, you know, as the years went on. For instance, Narcan. Narcan is not something that 5 years ago or 10 years ago was something that was a need. So, but it is a need now. So what we did is we kind of looked at what equipment was needed out there.
Well, hold on one second. Not everybody that's listening to this broadcast knows what Narcan is and knows what the threat is to the canines. Explain that for just a bit.
Absolutely. Narcan is an opioid reversal drug that is used. A lot of times people will hear about it being used on humans when a human overdoses on some sort of a drug, whether it be an opioid or whether it be fentanyl or something of that nature. The Narcan is a reversal drug that is used to counteract the effects of that drug that person has taken. The problem that we're having, and a lot of people, you are correct, are not aware of it, is obviously when you think of a canine, what is the first thing if they're doing a drug scent or if they're doing a track? What are they using to do that track? They're using their nose. So obviously, if they come across any type of opioid that possibly could have been spilled or could have been dropped on the ground, the dog's going to be susceptible to that overdose because they're sniffing it, just like a human would be doing. And what has been found through studies is that the Narcan can be used on our canines as well, that they can actually receive this life-saving drug and counteract the effects if they were to come in contact with one of these drugs that are out there. So a lot of times because of that, the departments themselves will be equipped with a Narcan for the humans, but they're not given Narcan for the canine. It's the exact same drug, except it's given in an injectable form as opposed to a nasal form. So when we started researching these kits that we provide to these officers, they come in a case that they can actually carry on their belt, on their person, so that they have it with them at all times. We do ask them to go to their vet so that they can understand how to dose it properly and also how to administer it to their canine in a situation where they would need it. And then we provide them with a dose of the Narcan, like I said, that they can keep on their person at all times, that they can use specifically for their dog. The kits run about $100 a piece, and we donate that to them at no charge.
What's the reaction been to, I mean, I would venture to guess that even some of the canine officers, that wasn't really in their radar until recently, and until maybe you even make them aware of it.
It's definitely, I mean, it took off. I would say since we started giving Narcan out or donating Narcan in July of last year, and since we've started donating Narcan in July of last year, we've donated over 153 kits to our police departments across the country. So it's more of a need. For instance, I just mailed out two kits last night, and there's another one sitting in front of me right now that's getting ready to go out. The officers are not, they're not capable of getting it, so we're providing it to them.
And that's fantastic.
It is. It's amazing. And I mean, it's been a lot of money. We could have possibly used the funds that we've, you know, because you figure, you know, 150 Narcan kits at $100 a piece is $15,000. That's a lot of heat alarm systems that we also donate as well. But the Narcan is a need. It's a need right now that they need, and it's something that we can, the larger items that we donate are a little bit harder for us to raise the funds for, whereas the Narcan is something we can raise the funds for pretty quickly by doing small events on the weekends or selling our merchandise or selling items that I make and I put on my website. So those are things that we can get out right away. It's things that we can do that quick help. And then while we're doing that, we're also working on raising money for the other items that we provide as well,
Let's talk about that. the Narcan is one thing. You've distributed over. By the way, how do the officers know to contact you to get this?
Most of it's word of mouth. We don't do any type of paid advertising because my thought is that if we spend money on paid advertising, that's less money we can go to our dogs. So we do all of our advertising through word of mouth, through Facebook, through our webpage, and just through different events and the handlers themselves getting the word out and talking to, you know, hopefully talking to, you know, to people like you that can help us get what we do out there and so that people can understand the needs. So that's really how we do all of our marketing and how we get it out there that this is available for these officers if they need it.
That's great. That's, well, hopefully there's going to be a whole lot of officers that are going to hear this broadcast and know that you exist. Now, you don't just provide that. You spoke to something that is very near and dear to me about, because unfortunately I have seen this happen, about dogs overheating in in vehicles. And so talk about those other items you provide.
The other item that we primarily work on right now, I mean, we do some other items too, but our core focus right now are the ACE K9 hot and pop systems and then the Narcan. The hot and pop systems, we're run by complete volunteers. None of us are paid. We all do this on the side just out of a passion and a love for canines and a respect for our officers. So myself and several of my dear friends that have the same passion as I do, basically what we looked at is what can we provide these canines? And then we reached out to ACE K9 and the top of the line system, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to give them the top of the line. So a top of the line ACE K9 system, which includes all the bells and whistles, runs in upwards of about $2,800 a piece.
Wow.
And what that includes is that includes, there's two components to it. There's the hot component and then there's the pop component. I'll go over the pop component first, because what that is it's a door popper. And what it allows is for the canine to be remotely deployed without having to open the door, for the officer to open the door themselves. And there was actually a situation in the Midwest where there was an officer that was doing a routine traffic stop, and he was jumped by a couple of guys and was basically being dragged into the woods in order to be beaten up, pretty much. And instead of reaching for his gun or instead of reaching for his taser, he reached for his pop system that it's basically a button that they carry on their belt, and it remotely deployed the canine. Obviously, the canine and the officer are alive today because of that equipment.
I'm familiar with that situation. In fact,
yes,
I think it was actually caught on video.
Yes, I think it was. Yeah, I just remember reading the story about it, and I was just so excited to see that these systems were out there. And then that was one of the reasons that I started looking into it. And then I started seeing the situations where these canines were passing away due to overheating in the vehicle. So then that's when I started looking at the hot portion of it. And what the hot portion of it is it's a component that goes within the squad car itself, and it regulates the internal temperature of the vehicle. So when the vehicle starts to get to a temperature that's set by the handler, then once it hits that temperature or gets close to that temperature, it'll roll down the windows, it'll turn on the fans, which we also provide the fans for the squad cars as well, and it'll start to try to regulate the internal temperature of the vehicle. If for some reason that vehicle does not get regulated, it will also send a notification to the canine officer via their cell phone. So if they're inside the courthouse and their vehicle starts to get hot, they'll get a notification on their cell letting them know that the system has been activated. And then if it does exceed that set limit, then what will happen is it will turn the siren on, it'll honk the horn, it will also alert four to five other people within the department that are set on a list that vehicle has now reached maximum temperature so that someone can get out to that vehicle and get that canine out. It also provides a component that if the engine stalls, it will alert the handler. And then it also provides a notification that if the handler leaves the vehicle and does not take their canine out, it will go do an audible warning letting them know that their canine is still in that vehicle so that they can make sure that they go back and get them. So there's a couple different pieces to it that are all part of what we actually provide the handlers. And the ACE K9 watchdog system is the piece of it that goes on their cell phones. That is probably, is as expensive as the heat alarm itself. But to me, it's a component that's worthwhile because, one, our officers pretty much, they always have their phones on them, for one. And two, the pager systems will only operate to a certain period or to a certain distance from the vehicles, whereas the ACE watchdog system runs off of a server and off of the cell towers. So as long as that officer has their phone, they're going to get that notification.
I love that. I have never heard of that, and that sounds like a tremendous safeguard for these dogs.
It is, and we also provide with, when you purchase the equipment, it gives them 1 year worth of server capabilities, and we also provide them with an additional year. And the reason that we do that is we figure it's about $168 a year for them to have this ACE watchdog system. So once it's actually installed and provided to them. And our thought is that within 2 years, they should be able to get it in their budget to be able to pay that $168.
Sure.
We obviously haven't been in existence long enough to have, you know, exceeded that 2 years, but I also let our officers know if something happens and your department cannot get that in their budget, to please reach out to us and let us know.
That's incredible. Have you had any feedback from the officers?
We have. We've donated five of the ACE canine systems to officers in the last year, and all the officers that have received them have been ecstatic. They've been very, very excited. As a matter of fact, we have 11 more on our wait list right now that we're trying to raise money for, and that was one of the reasons that I had reached out to you, because you figure that, you know, at $2,800 a piece, 10 units is, you know, 20 grand.
Yes, it's a substantial amount of money, absolutely.
It is. And last year we were successful. Last year we did raise over $50,000 and granted all of that equipment to departments across the country. So we were very, very successful last year, but it took a lot of work and it took a lot of events and weekends that my family and I and my volunteers spent at events selling merchandise and getting the word out. And we realized that we have to do a better job of getting it out there, what we do, because we were funded basically on donations. So, you know, it's important that people are aware of what we do and that, you know, if they do need to make that tax-deductible donation, that they can do that to us, and that they can help canines in the process. I mean, we have them on our wait list all over the United States right now.
So, you know, how do you raise money?
We do it a couple different ways. I make decals that I sell. I hand-make decals that I sell. We also have two events a year. We have one coming up the end of April that is a memorial ride. It's going out to Flight 93. In Pennsylvania, and then we're having a cookout picnic afterwards, and then that's all the proceeds from that event will be donated to Protection for Paws. And then we have our annual cruising for canines, which is in May, on May the 19th. It's in Hagerstown, Maryland, and we do a Fallen Heroes Memorial Ride prior to the event, where we will honor the heroes that were lost in the prior year. And then we have a car, truck, motorcycle, Jeep show. We have vendors. We have canine demonstrations. We'll have merchandise for sale. And that's all done on a Saturday. And 100% of the proceeds go to that as well. Last year was our first year, so this is our second year doing it.
That's it. So it's right after Police Week.
It is right after Police Week, yes.
So how was it attended last year?
Last year we started it was a brainstorm that we had in January, so we started doing the solicitations for it and getting it out there, and we had about 300 people that showed up for our very first event, which we were pretty happy with.
Yeah, that's great.
We were really excited, and we actually purchased our very first heat alarm system for a department in Virginia at Isle of Wight County in Virginia. They received the very first heat alarm system that Protection for Paws donated. So we were very, very excited. We were able to do that as a result of that event. And then that's when we started kicking out the Narcan kits. And then we've also purchased tracking harnesses. We've purchased, as a donation from Calypso Kennels in Virginia, we were able to donate a bite suit. And we've also purchased cruiser cages. We had two canines that did not have cages for their vehicles. and one of the officers couldn't use his canine because he kept eating the back of the squad car up. So we purchased a cruiser cage for him, and that was down in Texas. So he got a complete cage and heat alarm system. And then we also outfitted a cruiser up in Illinois as well. And we did a cage for them as well as a hot and pop system. We have two departments on our wait list right now that need cages as well. And they're about between $2,300 to $2,500. So everything that we donate is not cheap.
No, these are some high-ticket items.
They are. They are some high-ticket items, which you know, the thing that makes it difficult for all of us as volunteers is when we were first started, we didn't have dogs on our wait list, so we were basically just raising money, and as dogs came along, we went ahead and helped them out. Now it's making it a little bit harder because we have dogs that we have names and we have faces that need this equipment. So every day that we don't have the funds to fund these dogs is just... If anything ever happened to one of these canines that were on our list, I think all of us would be crushed. So it's important for us to get this wait list taken care of as soon as we can, so that when these handlers reach out to us and they ask us for stuff, we can give it to them.
This is called the bittersweet smell of success.
Exactly.
you have apparently touched a nerve with a need. And now this need is spreading, so that people are, as they get to know who you are and that you exist, this is just going to snowball more and more. So it's really imperative that you develop ideas that can help get you funded. And
exactly.
And events like I love the cruising. The cruising idea. I think this year, after your success from last year, I mean, listen, if you can get 300 people at your first event, that's tremendous. So, you know, this is something that we need to get the word out on. I will, of course, do my best to help you about this. So let's look at the date on this, okay? This is going to be Saturday, May 19th,
yes.
9 a.m. It's going to be in Hagerstown. How do people sign up for it?
They can sign up through our Facebook page, which is Protection, the number 4, Paws, P-A-W-S. They can also go out to our, and when they go to Protection for Paws on Facebook, they can click on the events. Anytime that we have events going on, we'll place those events out there on our page, and then we also will start updating those events within the event information as we go along. For instance, the Flight 93 ride, that we were having in the end of April, that started out with 83 people that were interested in it and maybe 10 people that were going, and now the ride has blown up. We as of last check, we had over 7,000 people that were interested.
Wow.
And over 341 people are going on this event if they actually purchase their tickets. So we're definitely, as we've gotten more awareness out there. When we first started our Protection for Paws page, I think we had 170 followers, and now we're up to 2,900 people that follow our page. So the awareness is definitely getting out there, and that's what's important.
This is a motorcycle ride, if I'm correct?
It's actually an anything ride. Basically, if you can drive it, you can bring it. it's not specific. We had somebody call us and ask us if they could ride their pedal bike, and I said, if you think you can do a 2-hour ride on your bike on your pedal bike, then come on out. I mean, we'll take everybody.
I love it. That's awesome. That's very cool. What does sponsorship cost?
A sponsorship costs $100 to sponsor the dog, and then they'll get, like I said, they get all of that items that'll be given to them at the event itself. And my hope is that with the monies that we raise from the sponsorship of just the memorial portion of the event, that we will be able to purchase one heat alarm system. So my thought is that the memory of the fallen will help protect an active duty canine.
I love it. I think that this is a tremendous resource for law enforcement, and the good that you're doing not just for the canines, but for law enforcement. And I love the aspect of bringing children closer together to their law enforcement officers. And you're absolutely right. Canines are a phenomenal resource to do that.
They are. And I mean, that's something that my daughters, the one day we were driving down the road and there was a canine patrol car and it was parked on the side of the road and we had to park, and the girls were like, "Mommy, continue to drive around till we can get right beside that canine officer." I mean, anytime that they see a patrol car that has a canine, they get all excited and they're like, "Let's go see him. Let's go see him." So, you know, it definitely softens there's a lot of bad press out there, and my hope is that if we can get the younger generation to counteract the bad press that's out there, that it's a step in the right direction.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So, okay, your website is Protection for Paws. It's Protection, then the number 4, paws.com.
That's correct. And on that page, on that web page, you'll see our events there. There's also a spot where we're accepting donations where you can make a tax-deductible donation. And the way that our donations work is, as the funds comes in, we have a wait list, and we will take care of the next dog that's on that wait list. And as soon as that dog is taken care of, then we move on to another dog. Right now, we're working on Canine Zoe, who's in Canine Zoe is located in, oh goodness gracious, I just lost it there for a minute. Because we just took care of a canine that needed just the ACE watchdog portion of the system. So we were able to take care of that one last night. Velda City is the next canine that we're working on. They're in Missouri, and it's Canine Zoe. And we have CrowdRise fundraisers going for every canine. And if you go on our website, or if someone wants to reach out to us via Facebook or through our website, we can give them the link of the different CrowdRise fundraisers. Anytime that we do a we have a dog in need, we will put an individual fundraiser out there for that dog as well. So if you live in a specific area and you want to help raise money for a dog in your area, you can actually take that CrowdRise fundraiser and start sharing it within your own page. And then we also do general donations as well. Basically, like I said, we put the dogs on the list. Narcans, we try to take care of immediately. If it's a request, they usually get it within 24 to 48 hours. The larger systems are the ones that we actually have the wait list for.
Sure, sure. All right, so for my listeners, Protection for Paws. That's protectionforpaws.com. They're doing amazing work. Reach out to Tina via their website or their Facebook page, which is also Protection for Paws. And Tina, I want to thank you for, first of all, for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, but mostly for the work that you're doing. I think it's valuable. I think that it's phenomenal what you're accomplishing. And, you know, as a law enforcement professional myself, I know that law enforcement officers all over this country appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate them. There's not enough words and letters in the word thank you to be able to thank all of our law enforcement for what they do each and every day.
Well, thanks again for being on Blue Lives Radio, and best of luck.
Thank you for having me.
If you are a law enforcement officer in the United States, or if you are a company that hires off-duty law enforcement officers for, say, security jobs, traffic jobs, things like that, you want to listen to this advertisement, because this is a company that's out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the states in the United States. They're called Law Enforcement Specialists Incorporated. And they have a really interesting business model. They take police officers. If you're interested in working extra duty jobs, and who isn't, right? I mean, it's hard to make ends meet on simply your salary. Contact law enforcement specialists, and they will put you on the list for extra duty jobs. Just like you go through your own agency to get extra duty jobs, well, they do it for you. and they work with your agency. It's really interesting. They're the only company I know of that does this. So if you go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, you can find out all about this company, and then you can also contact them and make yourself available for extra duty assignments. If you are a company that hires off-duty cops, then you want to do the same thing. Law enforcement specialists, they're out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States. And check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. And this is a great opportunity for both law enforcement and people who hire them to kind of make things easier. So check them out. That's law enforcement specialists at offdutypoliceofficers.com.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have two names to read. The first is Officer Scotty Hamilton of the Pikeville Police Department, Kentucky. Police Officer Scotty Hamilton was shot and killed at approximately 11:30 p.m. as he and a Kentucky State Police trooper conducted criminal patrol on Hurricane Road in the Hurricane Creek area of Pike County. The officers were in an area as a result of recent narcotics activities when they encountered a suspicious vehicle. As Officer Hamilton checked the area for the vehicle's occupants, he encountered a man and was shot in the head. One suspect was taken into custody at the scene. A suspect fled the scene but apprehended several days later. Officer Hamilton has served with the Pikeville Police Department for 12 years. He is survived by his wife and a child. Police Officer Scotty Hamilton, Pikeville Police Department, Kentucky. End of watch, Tuesday, March 13, 2018. The second law enforcement officer to be killed in the line of duty was Deputy Sheriff Ryan Zirkel. Deputy Sheriff Ryan Zirkel was killed in a single vehicle crash on Highway 1 north of Point Reyes Station while responding to a 911 hangup call shortly after 12 a.m. His vehicle left the wet roadway as it entered a curve in the road and struck a tree on the driver's side. He was flown to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. Deputy Zirkel had served with the Marin County Sheriff's Office for 2.5 years. He is survived by his fiancée, parents, and two brothers. Deputy Sheriff Ryan Zirkel, Marin County Sheriff's Office in California. End of watch, Thursday, March 15th, 2018. May these officers rest in peace. I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network.